Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonniewell, Julie Hayden, Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Two Straight Up, brought to you by
Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, and HappyTrees.co. Happy Party Friday, everybody. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Mark Poff on, talking about a couple of things, actually, the law enforcement federalization of local law enforcement agencies. And plus, we're going to be talking about the Durham stuff and the whistleblower testimony about interference in investigations. And I think Mark has, you may remember the Tom Clements, the Department of Corrections chief who was murdered several years ago. Mark was one of the lead investigators on that. And the suspect in the case, who eventually died in a shootout with police, was the son of one of Governor Hickenlooper's best friends. And I have long suspected, and we could talk to Mark about this, that there was interference in that investigation too. To this day, they haven't really arrested or even actually pursued or been allowed to pursue the people who probably were behind all of that. But want to start off with, we teased you on Wednesday and didn't have enough time. The Colorado Republican Party and people on the executive committee, like Chuck, for the most part, most of them, and Dave Williams, the grassroots have taken over. And I think it is good news for all of us. And they're holding people accountable and calling people out and naming names when the Republican rhinos, establishment people turn traitor. Right.
Well, you have to remember, a lot of people run as Republicans who really don't like Republicans, who don't like being Republicans, or at least, and they are personally not going to be accepted by Democrats because they're not cool enough or whatever.
Rich enough. Didn't go to Harvard. Aren't gay or transgender.
Well, who knows? But they often will do whatever the Democrats want them to do. They just sign on as quick as they can to trash other Republicans. I mean, that's their principal kind of role. And it's time they got kind of pointed out. And this is maybe the start of that. I mean, I think you have to have the idea that Democrats will sign on to something that is proffered by Republicans to criticize Democrats in another state. Zero.
Right.
They're not that dumb, and they're not that unprincipled. This all started up in Montana. They had a bill which would not allow you to gender mutilate or butcher children until they reached the age 18, in which case they could self-mutilate or do whatever they wanted to. And that seems reasonable to me. I think it's reasonable to most people. Most people find out nowadays in schools, they won't even tell parents that they're trying to transition their children, trying to get them to self-mutilate, not self, but have a surgeon mutilate them. And it's really an evil, evil process in order to get more trans people, I guess, is get them early
to destroy families.
And destroy families.
Destroy families.
Yeah,
because
destroy people.
Right.
So they had a bill would age, would prevent the sexual mutilation of people under 18. And, of course, they had a debate in the legislature. They had one trans person, activist, as a legislator named Zoe Zeff. And they had she was telling them they had blood on their hands and all these other
maybe
things.
Maybe it caused riots and all kinds of disruption. And
And when the bill came up, the legislature was filled with Democrat activists who hooted and hollered and tried to tear the place down, and they had to clear the chambers and all that, all led by Zoe Zeff. So they said, no, you can vote, but you're going to do it from home, and we're probably not going to recognize you from a debate. which seems, you know, not the worst thing in the world. So
just because I think they kind of they let this person, this legislator, have their say a little bit, but they didn't stop. Right. It was just it wasn't just like once or just one time. It was they were clearly going to disrupt anything that the legislature was trying to do. Yeah, right. And stop it from being able to do its business.
Yeah, I had to clear the galleries and all that. So down here in Denver at the same time, Republicans, they put out Proposition HH, which is a con job to get you to vote for a tax increase. And Republicans wanted to debate it. And
you know, Democrats put it up.
Put it up, and the Republicans wanted to debate it. And they said, no, it's toward the end. They brought it up the very last day or pushed it through the last day. And so they just refused to let them debate. That's it.
So in Colorado, that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. So all the Democratic, virtually all the Democratic House, people had just done to the Republicans, went up and wrote a letter to the Republican legislators saying that
in Montana, which is none of their business.
They think the Democrats think it is. It's amazing that, you know, all they talk about is tranny rights and the fact that trannies are being persecuted and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So four Republicans signed on the letter.
So back up because you were kind of, so Colorado Democrats wrote a letter to Montana Republicans,
right,
essentially chastising them,
yes,
for this horrible thing. Okay.
And they got two House members, Rick Taggart from Mesa, and Ron Weinberg from up in Larimer County.
Republicans.
Yeah, the Republicans. Two Republicans signed on to the Democratic letter, as well as Roger Hudson, who's deputy staff down at the House, as well as the Castle Pines
Council member,
and along with Abe Layden, who's a Douglas County. And so we said, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't stand up against gender mutilation of children, what good is it? I mean, what do the Republicans stand for? Anything?
Well,
absolutely anything.
It's like, and why are you even interjecting yourself into this fight? Right. You can see why the Democrats do. But if you're a Republican, it's not like, who do you think you're appeasing? Or, do you know what I mean? It's not even your fight. So why do you feel compelled to enter it and support the Democrats?
Well, because they feel to support Democrats. One of the people who signed on was Ken Weinberg, and he was saying he did it because he believed in freedom of speech. And you get, you know, he's a Stockholm victim. I mean, you just, the House just prevented you from debating a crucial bill altogether. And all you want to do is sign on to their letter to the Republicans saying they are violating free speech rights. I mean, it's true Stockholm syndrome. And he said, it was just incredible. And four people or so kind of, and it's a public meeting, so anybody could listen to it. You know, they had Lynch, who's the minority leader, and Bob Gardner subbing for the Senate minority leader. You know, they're saying, oh yeah, we've got to let them, you know, we believe in all this. And you know, they're saying, well, this will show the Democrats. You kind of go,
show them what? That we're a bunch of weak, spineless, godless traitors. Yes, that's what we showed them. And they weren't surprised. Democrats are like, oh, we've known this forever about you guys. So what Dave Williams and you guys did is decided to not just sit there and say, oh, well, spineless Republicans again, huh?
Yeah, we rebuke them and a few other.
Well, you drafted a resolution that was brought up at this week's Colorado Republican Party State Executive Committee, which has 25 members on it, and 23. Okay, and essentially sent out a notice. I mean, I'll read the language because you don't have your glasses on. It's like, say, be it further resolved that they applaud the majority of Republican state House and Senate members for not falling for this false narrative and propaganda ploy. And be it further resolved, the Colorado Republican State Executive Committee formally admonishes, rebukes, and reprimands Representative Ron Weingard, Representative Rick Taggart, Councilman Hudson, and Commissioner Abe Layton for helping radical Democrats to score political points by spreading lies against Montana House Republicans, and ask that they exercise better judgment in the future. It's like, thank you.
Well, what's the key is the Republicans never point out who really are the rhinos. I mean, if they get elected, they're identified as rhinos and are rhinos, well, good, you know, then they get elected. But you often don't know. They fool you, you know, and they, you know, talk about how they believe in Republican principles when they really just want to be lapdogs for Democrats. That's what they want to be. And so this just points them out, saying, what are you doing?
Right.
What in the world are you doing condemning Montana Republicans who don't believe in gender mutilation? Well, we do in Colorado. Anybody from Montana can come right down to Colorado and get mutilated at any age.
Support a Democrat PR ploy, right? This is a Colorado Democrat. It's just PR. Because do you think actually anyone in Montana is going to go, oh, look, yay, we have the, you know.
Well, people in Montana did kind of call down to Colorado and say, well, what kind of Republican party, what kind of Republican party do you have in Colorado?
For your writing, you're joining Democrat letters admonishing us. So I say, now that's just, let me ask you a theoretical question. Do you think this kind of censure would have come under Christy Burton Brown?
Zero.
Yeah, zero. So I'm going to give Dave Williams, and make no mistake,
give
Chuck all the credit for coming up with this and saying, hey, look, this is wrong and it's stupid. And we need to start, you know, the Rhino Watch. We need to start calling people out when they do stuff like this, because I mean, and it's more than just transgender. I mean, it was destroying parental rights, all of that kind of stuff, just basic things that Republicans believe in. And again, if they're going to do it, the Republicans, for some kind of PR points, I think we need to, and I'm so glad to see you guys did, call them out on it and say, well, yeah, you're not getting
any points. And you realize your legislative leaders in the House and the Senate and the Republican side were against it,
right?
Which tells you where they stand. And the deputy chief of staff, which is Roger Hudson, he stands with them. And so what kind of Republican Party is it? Do I think it'll change these guys? No. I think Roger Hudson was thrilled.
But hopefully the voters are paying attention, you know, and again.
Well, if they get opponents, Republican opponents, this will be a record they can say, you know, just know who and what you're voting for.
Right. And I think, and here's some other things, because I wanted to talk about this a little bit more. Jacob points out Buck didn't vote for censure. Exactly. And Jim says it puts Buck in the same low class as Shifty Schiff, that pile of Schiff. And on top of that, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is introducing articles of impeachment against Joe Biden, Ken Buck is one of two Republicans on the Justice Judiciary Committee that won't vote for impeachment. It's like, why on earth not, Ken Buck? I mean, the Democrats voted to impeach Trump and rammed that through based on things that they knew, because they concocted it, were lies. Right. So this is how the Democrats play. When are the Republicans going to wake up to, you got to play like they do? And I would think the even bigger question is, what's up with Ken Buck? Why is he behind this? Why did he not vote to censure him? And why would he not vote for impeachment? It's like, what is his motivation, right? I mean, it's you know, the impeachment isn't going to go through anyway. It won't get through the Senate, right? So it's like, what is, or whose hand is, my bigger question, is in Buck's pocket that's preventing him from doing this? What is the payout somewhere down the road that he's willing to take the heat for that now?
Well, you know, he's a Liz Cheney Republican.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's good. Other times he's awful. He's on the Freedom Coalition, Freedom Caucus, which is sort of a joke.
Right.
You know, kind of like, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. I guess he does whatever he wants to do, and he gets to do it. But
why, though? You know, I mean, he should.
I don't know why.
Well, no, but I think he's not. He doesn't just sit at home and flip a coin. But I just think, again, if you're a voter in CD4, that's something to ask: is what's up with Ken Buck, and why is he not standing strong with other Republicans at the time when we need to stand strong? Who is he actually supporting? You know, who is actually controlling him, I guess I would say. Or if he's controlling himself, then why is he doing it this way? And I think it's just, we need to start calling these people out because they don't care, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so easy. You just say, I'm pro-Constitution, I'm pro-Second Amendment, and then you just go as left as far as you can possibly go. And nobody seems to care.
Well, and didn't Buck wrote a book, Drain the Swamp, yeah, right? Well, he talked about how horrified. I mean, you don't get much swampier than Hunter Biden sitting next to his dad, calling China and saying, hey, I'm sitting here next to my dad, who by the vice president, just in case anyone's wondering, and we want our money and we want it tonight. I mean, it's like, and then
boom, they're good at the that. Money. That's what they get. That's what Biden did over in Ukraine. He said, you got 6 hours or you're not going to get the billion bucks.
Exactly. But it's kind of like, how much swampier does Ken Buck need it to be before he would want to vote for impeachment? Yeah, I mean, what would it take for him to vote for impeachment? So I think, you know, I think Jacob is saying, or is it Jacob? Yeah, Jacob is saying Buck's congressional district should start primarying Buck out right now. Yeah, you know, we hear rumors
the assembly process, he only got a little over 30% of the votes. But once he got past the primary, he was off to the races and he got elected easily.
Yeah. Well, and I think it sends back, and now, because we want to talk about some of the Hunter Biden stuff here now.
The good part about it, the executive committee, almost overwhelmingly, except for four people, wanted to do the censure, and it was great to listen, having been on the Central Committee 2 years ago, where it was mostly rhinos, or many rhinos. It was great to see such a great Central Committee.
Do you remember offhand, did Priscilla Rahm voted against it?
Yeah.
Well, although she's now resigned as vice chair, and she's going to run for Douglas County Commissioner.
Well, you have to understand, it was a voice vote, so everybody just said yay or nay.
So it was hard to tell.
Well, it wasn't too hard to tell, because there's a very few nays. So the four people who spoke out against it were Kathleen Chandler, the Independence Institute, Priscilla, and the two from the state house and state senate, the other 20 odd people, 18 odd people, voted for it, which was really
huge.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Great, because all the excuses they gave were just so weak.
Right. Right.
I think Kathleen Chandler said, well, we could hold up this letter next time they try to silence all the Republicans. And you think they're going to be impressed? Well, we just have to beat you a little harder.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even this doesn't do anything, but at least I think it puts people on notice that under Dave Williams and Chuck and the other people on the executive committee, they're going to start naming names and calling people out when Republicans, when they are traitors. And so I think that's good, because can I switch now a little bit? Because switching now, I think what we saw last night with Hunter Biden attending the state ceremonial dinner at the White House for the Indian Prime Minister shows, again, some of these people, these arrogant rhino Republicans, the Democrat elites, the progressive wing, the deep state, they don't care what we think. They don't care what people say or don't say. I mean, I can't think of anything more arrogant. So Hunter, on the part of the Biden administration and Hunter Biden, who is entire, I mean, what? The guy was deducting tens of thousands of dollars of payments to a sex club. That, by the way,
amateur sex club.
That, by the way, he was kicked out of for being obnoxious. Now, you're just going to say, how obnoxious does one have to be to get kicked out of a sex club? I mean, I wouldn't want to see that, but I would imagine that that's a fairly low, you know what I mean? Sex club behavior. I don't know what kind of standards they have, but to get kicked out of it. and then he was deducting the payments to the prostitutes that he was seeing. I mean,
that's AIDS.
I mean, so the IRS actually went and interviewed these women. They're like, oh no, we're not his age. We're prostitutes. And they're like, okay, thank you. So that's all okay. He pleads guilty to misdemeanors. All of this information drops about how the White House, and we're going to get into that, and the Department of Justice has completely corrupted the investigation and stonewalled the real investigation of Hunter Biden. So what do they do? Hunter Biden shows up at the White House ceremonial meeting for the Prime Minister of India. I mean, what a slap. And
well, I'm sure he squeezed him for a contribution, right. You know, some money, you know. Hey, you want to buy some of my art?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be funny. We should put up a meme of the Indian prime minister carrying out some art pictures to his car signed by Hunter Biden. I wouldn't be surprised to know. And they do that again because they don't care, right? They just don't care. In their arrogance, they think they're untouchable, and maybe they are, but this is, if we could put, but Representative Jason Smith called them out on this, at least a little bit, on Maria Bartiromo. If we could please play the Smith soundbite.
And here's the text that we've been talking about this morning. I'm sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. Tell the director that I would like to resolve this now before it gets out of hand, and now means tonight. And Z, if I get a call or text from anyone involved in this other than you, he goes on to continue. And he says, you, Zhang, or the chairman, I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me and every person he knows, and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I'm sitting here waiting for the call with my father. I mean, Mr. Chairman, this sounds like the mafia.
Maria, it's terrible. Just think about this. In Biden's America, what did we witness last night? We saw a fancy state dinner at the White House, and you have the person who's accused of these criminal allegations, and also the department that has slow walked these allegations, the leader of that department, seated and dining at the same table. All of this smells bad. The American people aren't happy about it. The problem is these whistleblowers, they brought to light that in Biden's federal government, all Americans aren't treated equally. If you're wealthy and politically connected to the Biden family, you're going to have special treatment.
Well, and special treatment. So they talked about it. I saw a thing. It was good. It said they delayed, divulged, and then denied. So through the whole Hunter Biden investigation, what that we learned from, they released yesterday the whistleblower testimony, the transcripts. And so from there, we learned all the way through the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland completely delayed, you know, and confused. And
well, they prevented the, and it is true today that lying is okay. I mean, you know, they're not embarrassed anymore. Whether it's Pierre Trudeau or it's Sunak in England, I mean, they're just don't care. They don't care. You know, they'll just tell you a blatant lie to your face, and it doesn't matter. And they know you're lying. It's just, you got to give them credit for morals left.
Exactly. Merrick Garland stuff. There's no, I mean, so then they turn out that they had search warrants they were going to execute on Hunter Biden and some of his properties, right, to get tax records. Now, the key thing about a search warrant is you want it to be a surprise to the person, right? If the person knows that you're about to search, then they maybe hide things, right, or get rid of evidence. That's why you keep it secret. That's why search warrants are sealed until they're executed in the federal government. But instead, the U.S. attorney working on the case said is no, don't execute it for about 8 days, turn around and literally immediately calls Hunter Biden's attorney and says, hey, just so you know, we've got these search warrants. And so guess what happens when they show up? Oh, wow, nothing's there. And then when they still were able to get enough evidence to charge him, they felt, the investigators, seasoned veteran investigators felt, to charge, well, I mean, these are guys who knew what they were doing, right? To charge him with felonies for violating the tax code, they just said no. So it's kind of like, and then they promptly moved all of those investigators out of the investigation. So think about this. So Merrick Garland, they're using this so they won't comment anymore, right? But they said that technically the Hunter Biden investigation is still ongoing, right? So what the frick is Hunter Biden doing sitting next to Merrick Garland? And, I mean, what do you suppose they chatted about? You know, hey, that thinking of deducting your sex prostitutes for in your sex club. That was brilliant.
They still allow people to join?
I guess it would be a business deduction. Yeah. I don't know. Or maybe health or something. I'm not sure.
But I must admit, you know, I'm no longer outraged. I'm so kind of that.
That's what they're counting on. That's what we've got to stay outraged, guys.
Well, it's hard because
caffeine helps.
Caffeine helps, yeah. And it's just, I mean, the president and his son are such filth.
Now, here's a question for you, though. I don't know if you noticed, but today, if you've seen it, if you haven't, take a look at it, because it is kind of interesting. Karine Jean-Pierre gets a little bit snippy because they had a bunch of corporate media people saying, one, the first question was, do you think it's weird that Hunter Biden was at the state dinner sitting next to Merrick Garland when there's still an investigation? Goes, I'm not going to talk to that. The president could invite his family to the White House for dinners if he wants. It's like, okay. And then they say, well, what about this WhatsApp text where he says, I'm sitting next to my father? She's like, you know, the White House counsel answered that. I'm not going to talk about it. And they're like, can you remind us what the White House counsel said? And she said, no. And then, I mean, she did. And then they pursued it. They did. They said, it's a simple yes or no question. Was the president sitting there or not? And she wouldn't answer it. The fact that she wouldn't answer it isn't surprising. What was surprising is the White House press corps like woke up. So my question is, what do you guys think? Did the White House press corps wake up because they've now decided that this actually is very problematic for Joe Biden and they don't want him to run? Or is it because, as Chuck said, they know they can pretend to do their jobs, they can act like they're doing their jobs, and it's not going to make any difference, so why not just do your job, that no one's going to care? What do you I'm beginning to lean toward the latter, to tell you the truth, that they all know they've beaten us down, and no one's going to care, right? They can write their story, and no one's going to say Joe Biden is bad, Joe Biden can't run. Well, you know, by the time 2024 comes around, they'll call it debunked.
It'll be a Russian conspiracy.
It's a debunked conspiracy established by the Republic or by the Russians. But what do you think it is? Do you think they are finally? Wait, I don't for a second. Let me put it this way. The one option I don't think that is true is that they've actually, you know, have principles all of a sudden and they're doing their job.
No. They just know it doesn't matter. The voting rigging is already in perfect. This won't hurt the Bidens. You know, we're just immune to the Biden corruption. And it doesn't matter how many millions they stole, how many policies they rigged. They're just the left has, you know, it has no morals, has no anything else. And it just is happy to go along. And then you'll get Republicans who'll sign a letter saying what Joe Biden did was great. And they
Right, exactly. Well, let's read some of the comments because, you know, Jim Jackson, this is a good point, Jim. What an insult to India. That's true.
Yeah.
And then Jacob from Politico, even as the caucus pushes to expand to a 50-50 majority this fall, it's bracing for a fight to defend 23 seats to the GOP's 10 in the next election cycle, many of them in red and purple territory. Against that backdrop, at least 8 members of Chuck Schumer's caucus are agonizing over whether to run again, and a couple hail from states that could be lost to the GOP if the incumbent bows out. It's right, Jacob. Come on, Republicans. Here's your chance. And then from Charlene, Chuck and Dave and Julie making a difference in their own backyard, not impressed with Priscilla Ron now being recruited by RINOs to run for Douglas County Commissioner. Thank you, Charlene, number one. Yeah, Priscilla...
I like Priscilla as a person. I mean, I've always enjoyed her and everything else, but she certainly has joined the.
I think Priscilla's vote to not support this center probably was largely tied to her decision to want to run for Douglas County Commissioner. Why she thinks that would help her, I don't know, because in Douglas County, I think the parents have been pretty outspoken, you know, although maybe she didn't want to censure Abe. Layton, yeah, you know, who's on the county commissioner. I don't know. And maybe she needs his support. But, you know, here's a thought. Why not just do the right thing? Why not just do the moral thing? Why not just have some principles without weighing the political scales to try to see what might be your best move? Why not just do what's right? I mean, I know that's a silly thing to say, but that's just what I would think, you know?
Well, you know, I said, I really like Priscilla, but he's decided that politically, that's where she wants to run from.
So, and we had more stuff, but I think we're going to save it because they see we do have Mark Poff. We'll talk about Nance Gates. We'll play it even next week because it's good enough to see where he kind of goes after Durham and says, you were part of the cover up. Okay. So don't even sit there and pretend like you're not. And so we'll play that because it's good to walk through. Because here again, I guess they think we can't see, or they're so arrogant and so confident in their ability to win no matter what, that they think it doesn't matter. So we can't let them get away with it. But we won't go into my concerns about election integrity because that's too depressing. We won't go there. Hey, so we've got Mark Poff on.
Yay.
With this former law enforcement El Paso County investigator.
Ace golfer.
I didn't want to catch. Hey, Mark, thank you for your time on this Friday.
Yeah, no problem. It's been quite a week for me. It's been crazy.
Yeah, us too. Us too. The summer, I thought it was going to be relaxing. Hey, Mark is going to be filling in for us, speaking of crazy, because Rev has another golf tournament on Monday. And I want to let you talk about a little bit what you're going to exactly going to talk about. But we were talking earlier, and I don't know if you heard it, about the higher-ups interfering with the Hunter Biden investigation, right? The tax investigation. And I thought to myself, Mark has had some experience with this. You are the lead investigator for one of the investigators in the Tom Clements case, which involved a district attorney, which involved the best friend of John Hickenlooper's son. Right, right. And I covered that case a lot. And I think that in that, there are a lot of politicians who I think interfered to make sure that no one got to the truth because it was going to be inconvenient to them. Would you agree with that?
Well, there was definitely a lot of players that were throwing crap around. We couldn't keep it secret, for one thing. You know, we found it very interesting that, you know, we could keep our investigation pretty hush-hush. But once we told the governor's office, because he wanted a briefing, so he sent somebody down. And as soon as we briefed this person from the governor's office, you know, next thing we did, we saw it on CNN. So what's up with that? Everybody, I don't want to say everybody. I don't know if it was so much a direct interference as it was that they were trying to push us in different directions and stuff. The FBI wanted us going in one direction. Everybody, I'll tell you this is definitely true. Everyone's pissed that we wouldn't give the investigation up. And again, this goes back to one of those themes that I've had for a long time, which is that the federal government wants to take over local law enforcement. And this is one of those scenarios.
Right.
When Tom Clements was assassinated in northern El Paso County, about a mile and a half from my house, I was one of the first detectives over on the scene. All of a sudden, CBI calls up, Colorado Bureau of Investigations, and says, hey, we have two vans on the way with our investigators and our CSI guys. We're going to take that crime scene over. We're ready to take it. And basically, the sheriff said, yeah, you can turn those vans around.
Right.
You know, we worked on a lot of homicides. We're a major law enforcement agency in the state of Colorado. We really don't need your help. And I will tell you that typically CBI agents have less experience than good homicide detectives from large agencies that, you know, we were handling anywhere from 12 to 14 homicides a year. So, I mean, we were experienced. Now, we're not like Denver or some of, you know, Detroit or some of these other crazy places, but most of us had a pretty good experience. During my 10 years, I worked on about 80 homicides. So that's almost 10 a year that I worked on. And so we were very experienced. So CBI was trying to get on it. The governor, I think, wanted CBI because he controls CBI.
Right. And remember, there was all the talk about the Saudi, which I kind of still believe that a lot. But I mean, the governor flip-flopping on letting that Al-Turkey guy go free. Then not to mention the fact that, this didn't come out till later, but that it was his best friend or one of his good friend's son who was the one who did the shooting. I mean, you're right. I absolutely agree that, because I mean, typically the way it works in law enforcement, don't you like call up the CBI and say, hey, we need some help here?
And that's mainly it's for small agencies.
Right.
Like if you're in a small agency where you have a sheriff, an undersheriff, and three of his buddies, who is the whole sheriff's department. And you have a homicide, what are you going to do?
Right.
And you know, working for the defense now, for the most part, you know, I'd love for a small agency not to call CBI because it's great. It's a target-rich environment for us. You know, when you have the sheriff saying, well, I look down the barrel, look like a 45 to me. You know, so they're talking like they're experts and stuff. And typically, you know, CBI does have good experts that understand this stuff when you want to do DNA testing and all kinds of stuff. CBI just doesn't show up. You've got to call and say, we need help.
Or someone calls them and says, get down there. Well, and so without going into all the particulars.
Well, but let me ask you, is the case closed yet?
Not according to them. And what's so funny is Bill Elder, the whole, you know, comedy of stuff with him, he wanted to close it. And they all called him and said, look, you're a dumbass.
Yeah.
You know, if you close the case, people can ask through CORA requests to get records and all kinds of stuff. If you leave it open forever, you could say, well, that's an active investigation. So we can't. I mean, that's how stupid Bill Elder was as a sheriff. I could just, I'd love to have heard that phone call from the governor down to the sheriff saying, are you an idiot?
Don't be.
Well, apparently Merrick Garland knows that rule because the Hunter Biden investigation is still ongoing.
Oh, is that what they said? I thought he took a plea deal.
Yeah.
So if he takes the plea deal and he's littering or something.
And then they sit next to each other at this dinner. So let me ask you, number one, in your experience as a law enforcement officer, how likely is it that somebody who just pled guilty had a plea deal, but the investigation is still ongoing
and hasn't been sentenced.
And hasn't been sentenced, sits next to the guy who's in charge of the investigation and prosecution against him.
So I got to get this straight. So you're saying that at some presidential event last night, I heard some of your earlier stuff. It was last night or whatever.
Yeah, last night.
Hunter Biden sat next to Garland.
Yes.
At the same table. Uh-huh. Yep.
Same table.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't know, Charles Manson, you know, sitting at the table with, it's craziness. I think you said this earlier, you know, right when I was getting on. When you don't even care about the appearance of impropriety, that's when you know someone is really corrupt. And not only corrupt, they just don't care. No. It's like, you can't touch me. And I'm going to show you that you can't touch me because I'm going to do something mega stupid.
Right.
And you still can't touch me. It's like down here with the DA, Dan May. When CSPD, Colorado Springs Police Department, we keep telling the same old story about how a Democrat backed up over a guy on the road and they rode him up. And then one of his buddies in the Republican Party backed up and ran someone over. Well, what happened was Colorado Springs Police Department sent over basically charging documents to charge this guy. And Dan May, what he should have done to even be, you know, deceitful or whatever, corrupt, he just said, we'll look into that. And then 6 months later, say, we looked into it, didn't see anything there, we're just going to let it go. He didn't even do that. He rejected the paperwork from CSPD and said, kiss my ass, to just show, look, not only am I corrupt, I'm going to show you I'm corrupt, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm not even going to look at the paperwork and give that appearance of being neutral. He didn't care. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. It's a Republican. I saw his voter registration card.
Well, let me ask you this. And as an investigator, going back to what it must have been like for the IRS guys, and what it must have taken for these whistleblowers to go through, what is it like when you're trying to do your job and you know, and you can just feel all of these tentacles trying to reach you and grab you and pull you and interfere with the election? Or with the election, investigation.
I know for me, I had one incident, and it's a little different, but it's something that really pissed me off. Is we had a deputy, a female deputy, that was accused of impropriety with her own son.
Okay.
So that's real tricky.
Right.
And so they had to bring me in because there was technology involved. So I'm in the room and I hear commanders and everybody, you know, all these high level people. And you see certain individuals in the room are saying, look, we need to make sure we do a decent investigation, be respectful to her, you know, and all kinds of stuff. Then you have others saying, well, okay, let's fire her and then let's go hit her house, you know, and I'm just like, okay, settle down. So we actually did execute a search warrant on her house, on our own deputy, on one of our own deputies. And we seized a whole bunch of technology. Well, this was probably like on a Thursday or a Friday. So we seize it all, and then I seal it up, put it into evidence, and then I go pheasant hunting. Because that's what I do. I go
pheasant hunting. When you're not golfing, you're pheasant hunting. Yeah.
But it was that time of year, and that's how I remember when it happened, is because I was going pheasant hunting. So I went pheasant hunting, came back Monday or Tuesday, and then I went to go get the evidence to, you know, got to look on this very discreetly. I had a lab, wouldn't let anybody else in because supposedly there was some videos or pictures of her or whatever. And it was my job to be discreet as the computer forensics guy. So no one else would be left in the room. And if I see any videos of her, no one else would see it because it has nothing to do with the case. And so I went through all this. The commander, well, first thing is she had an iPad. And when I came back, whenever you seal something, I don't have something to show you, but what you basically do is you like seal it And then if you open this evidence bag up again, you'll cut it someplace else and then seal it there and initial it. And you always cut a new hole so you know that that bag's been opened three times, four times, five times, whatever. And if you have so many holes that you can't do it anymore, you wrap that one up, you get a new bag.
Right.
You put the original bag in the new bag. So you know you can show to a court if it ever goes to trial, it was opened X number of times, and you know everybody who opened it. I came back and the bag was laying there, and right across the seal, it was cut. And I was like, and I called the sergeant in immediately. I said, what the hell has happened? He goes, oh, the commander and the undersheriff looked through the iPad. I go, what the? What? Yeah. He goes, yeah, they wanted to see what was on the iPad. They were looking for nudies of this deputy because she was cute. And they said they went in to my lab because they had a key, cut open the evidence, sat there and got the head of IT. Okay, I'm not IT. I'm the computer forensic. Got the guy from the head of IT. They get the iPad out, start looking through it, completely corrupted the, I mean, I can't use that for evidence now.
Right.
Because
yeah.
Dumbasses get it. I've used that word three times now, but I always loved that 70s show because Red always said that. But so this is the commander and the undersheriff that did this. So I was pissed off. And then the commander has the audacity to come in the lab and say, hey, Mark, if you happen to see, because I know you're processing her Mac today, if you happen to see any nudie shots, you know, you need to let me know. You know, because that's important for me as the commander to know that. Well, okay, so I did see some stuff. There was nothing relating to the case. I sealed everything up, and I sent it back down to evidence. And I told him there was nothing there of evidentiary value. Well, then my boss came in and said, hey, was there any, of those type of videos? And I said, yeah, that had nothing to do with the case. And he goes, whoa, the commander wanted to see that. And I said, I don't give a flying. That is so
wrong.
Wrong. I said, I don't care. He's not going to be able to see her sex tapes. That's BS.
Yeah.
And so he goes, well, Mark, I'm going to have to tell him. I said, you go tell him whatever you want. I have sealed all the evidence up, and I personally drove it all down to evidence and checked it in. So you tell that old fat man that if he wants to see that stuff, he can dive down to evidence and pull it out himself. I'm not doing it. So about an hour later, the commander comes in. He is irate, says that I violated a direct order and that he's coming for me. And I said, write it up. Write it up. Go for it. Let's have this conversation in front of the sheriff. So he ended up giving me a letter of reprimand. And he said,
you're kidding.
Oh, no. Only negative thing in my IA file was for basically protecting the integrity, if you want to call it that, of a female deputy. So he gives me this letter and he goes, but the good news is, Mark, after a year, you can ask for this to be pulled out of your personnel file. I guess it's so really, no, it was a letter of counseling, not reprimand. So a letter of counseling after a year in your personnel file, you can ask for it to be removed. No kidding. A year later, he comes back to me and he goes, hey, Mark, just wanted to let you know you could get that letter out of your personnel file. And I'm like, why does he care if I yank that letter? I said, you know what? We'll let it stay because maybe someone will ask me what it's all about. And I can tell him what it's all about. And he stormed out of my lab again because he knew he tampered with physical. He committed a felony. Him and the undersheriff committed a felony. And I'm just sitting there going, what the hell's going on here?
What was his name? Biden?
Yeah. Was it Merrick Garland? Well, I mean, and so it happens, but it's kind of like, and maybe, I mean, that's distressing, actually, Mark, to know that it happens to that degree all over the place. But you'd think, though, that here, I mean, well, they did the same thing. They didn't give him a letter of reprimand when they started complaining about it and said, well, we recommend these felonies. They just yanked him off the investigation. I guess that'll do it,
Right. Well, and that's what Dan May also did about the Tom Clements case, is he had his best deputy DA, Jeff Lindsay. Jeff Lindsay I worked with him on cases, best homicide DA that Dan May had the most experienced trial lawyer, was absolutely the best of the best. And as soon as we told him, oh, by the way, they put a hit on you there, Dan May. And he said, drop everything, charge nobody, get the hell out. all of a sudden Jeff Lindsay went to another assignment, and then it was asked, what, I don't understand. He goes, we needed to put him on something more important.
Yeah.
More important than the Tom Clements assassination. What might that be? Parking or backing over Democrats, backing over individuals on Tejon Street? I mean, it was just so obvious. And Sheriff Makeda really wanted to charge these three individuals that were part of the Tom Clements homicide.
Right.
Never happened because Dan May was totally corrupt. And, you know, it still happens. And I'll tell you this, I can't go into specifics. This week has been crazy for me. I was supposed to testify Tuesday, and that was supposed up in Denver, supposed to be my only thing going on kind of the whole week. I was going to chill, take my vet in to get worked on today.
Pheasant
hunting.
Didn't happen. So on Wednesday, I get a phone call. Hey, Mark, are you all set to come up to Arapahoe County on Wednesday or Thursday? You're scheduled to testify. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I've been in court the last two Thursday, and then today I was in court most of the day up in Arapahoe on a case. But on Tuesday, I saw, and I got to talk generically because this case is still going on, but I saw a Denver PD cop get their ass, oh, said it four times, got their butt handed to them by a defense attorney. And the stuff that they did, that they admitted to, I mean, and thank goodness that they admitted that they actually did it. But stuff that's just unbelievably unethical in their stuff. And it's just, it amazes me. You know, they always say, once you see the sausage made, but I have to tell you, you know, I was a cop for 17 years. I never saw any of this kind of stuff.
Well,
I saw the one.
Let me ask you about this. And then, because then I'll give you a chance to talk about what we want to talk about on Monday, but I got to wonder, because I would agree with you too. I mean, I covered courts and crime and stuff, and it seems to me that it has gone to a whole new level. And I think when you have, when you've got, you're watching stuff going on at the Department of Justice, you're watching the FBI just make up investigations. I gotta imagine that kind of attitude that like the actual laws don't matter, just the results matter, that we get the results we want, and that nothing's really going to happen just if we get caught. I mean, that attitude has got to filter throughout the whole system.
Well,
I have to say
that I was a clerk for a defense firm after my second year in law school down in Fort Worth, Texas. And nothing's changed. I mean, I guarantee you, nothing has changed.
Not since 1883.
So
Fort Worth is still the same from then.
But I mean, those were some interesting police officers.
But, you know, today I testified in a case, and it's interesting because, you know, I was a cop for 17 years, 10 years as a detective, and man, does the prosecution hate me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they feel that because I testify, and I even said today, look, I live to the FBI standards. Never thought I'd hear that, you know, because they actually have this really high, this one part of the FBI, and I'll talk about it at some point about how the FBI does cell phone records is actually pretty good, but local law enforcement doesn't. But I'll tell you one thing that happened was there was a deputy, Arapahoe County deputy, that was in the courtroom, and I went over and started talking to him because, you know, I used to be a deputy with El Paso County. And basically what he told me, he goes, I would never work the street now. He goes, I get paid the same as somebody who works the street. I work in the courthouse, and it's a safe environment from the standpoint of getting themselves in trouble. It's safer than all this business going on, you know, out in the real world. And he's going to get the same retirement as somebody who works the street.
Yeah.
Well, going back to my Fort Worth experience, yes, you may get the same amount of money, but there's lots of additional earning potential out on the streets.
You bring up an interesting point. So I actually, you know, I still teach at the college. In fact, there's a night course starting for post-certification that I start teaching next week. And I have this Jeopardy game that I let the recruits play towards the end. And one of the questions that come up is, it's like a Jeopardy game. One of them is, when executing a search warrant, what percentage of the cash do you put into evidence? That's one of the questions. And I just want to see how the recruits, they're like, oh,
50-50.
We haven't been taught this yet. No one's told us this yet. And they're like, what's the answer? And I look at them and say, well, it depends on how many supervisors are on scene.
Because I have to get their cut, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's got to be greased.
Hey, listen, before we wrap you up, so you have to talk about this on Monday. Jim wants to know your thoughts on the Live PGA merger, and Jacob wants to know if your vet has classified documents in the trunk.
Well, and here's the deal. I don't think the PGA, I am kind of a golf fan, just like you guys are. I don't think they should let the Live and PGA merger. That's a bunch of BS. Again, you're letting foreign control of something very important in America, which is golf.
Right.
And they're going to try to take the PGA over. I don't understand why they're even having that conversation. And if I was one of the golfers who did not go to Live and this went down, right, I'd be livid. I'd be like, okay, let's start our own. Let's start a players.
Exactly. You
know, well, that's what the PGA is supposed to be. It's supposed to be controlled by the members. And they have what they've called an advisory board. Advisory board. You know, you are.
I know what that is.
Yeah.
I got to wrap us up. I hate to do this. Real quick, what are you going to talk about on Monday?
About my classified documents in the trunk of my vet, of course.
Exactly.
So one of the things that's interested me is, and I may not have anybody with me on Monday, but the following time, John's going to be with me. He actually has to go to a hearing. The thing that's really interested me, and I'm going to spend the weekend looking through this even more, is this report from DOJ up in Minnesota. This really interests me. Because, you know, we had talked about it a little bit, I think, and they've done this before, you know, they took New Orleans over years ago. I think this is another opportunity where they're going to say, you need either federal control or we need to tell you what to do. So I want to review that report and all that. And I need to, you know, also review my IRS stuff because I can't write off amateur sex clubs, but I think I can write off professional sex clubs.
That's
and
right.
I think
that's
I can right. write it down as a team morale event, right? Can I put that down to a team building environment?
Oh yeah, there you go. There you go.
That's your HR department. It's recommended.
Right. I have the highest morale of any team in the company.
Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Monday.
We look forward to it.
Save the video. We had plenty of other video. Thank you to everybody on Zoom, the great guys at BBS. It's Party Friday.
Everybody go out pheasant hunting. And if you can't do that, at least play golf.
Make sure to keep your receipts because you never know what you can deduct these days.
Right.
We'll see you all later. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.